Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with actor, choreographer, director, Jim Weaver, who is currently in Sarasota, Florida, having directed and choreographed the West Coast Black Theater Troupe's first production of the 2013-2014 season, the classic musical, Pearlie. This is a lovely interview where a man talks about having fallen in love with theater even before he really knew what it was and dedicating an entire life to it. Also, listen to some songs from the cast album of Pearlie that will probably make you want to come and see the show. So hang on, here come the show. Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are, so you can live the life that you would be living if you were all that you really are. It is my belief, confirmed by my many years as a psychotherapist, that many, many of us are not living the life we would be living if we were all that we really are, because we don't have access to all that we really are. I say in these shows that I run into over and over again the experience of seeing people who are living what I call their cover story. That is, the truth, some truths about them, but not the whole truth about them. I often use the analogy of it being like a spy's cover story. We all know that spies have cover stories because if it were known who they really were, they would be in danger, often in danger for their life. And the analogy is perfectly apt for us. I believe that my experience as a therapist confirms this, that too many of us learn in our childhood, either from our family of origin, from our school, teachers can be awful with this, siblings, playmates, our religion, our culture, that certain things about us, our impulses, our behavior, what we think, our reflexes, our talents, our interests, our curiosities, these things don't match, don't fit with what others wish us to be, insist that we are, need us to be, tell us we have to be. And when we run up against something like this, when a behavior of ours or a talent of ours or an impulse of ours gets the result, the consequence, the reaction of teasing, neglect, isolation, punishment, and in some unfortunate cases, even trauma, we learn in no uncertain terms that these qualities are not going to bring us happiness, joy, love, affection, comfort, care, safety. And because we are extraordinarily flexible, we learn to first pretend we don't have these qualities, whatever it is, and we bury them so deeply that over time we forget that we have these things. We forget pieces of who we are. And so we come into childhood demonstrating the limited version, the version that I'm calling our cover story, the version that went down easily or was accepted or didn't cause that much distress for us. Or even protected someone. If a parent was made frightened by our capacity to take risks, maybe we were really a risk-taking kind of kid and we would leap off the kitchen table or something, and we could see on our parents' face the horror that something bad might happen to us, we could suppress that quality in order to protect a loved parent, in order not to cause pain. But whatever our motivation, when we have suppressed, denied, buried, and my term for this is having put undercover any aspect of ourselves, then we are diminished by that. And not only do we not now have access, for example, the kid who might have taken risks that would enhance his or her life, might have gone out for a career that was really risky, but might have succeeded in that and had the pleasure and the joy of achieving what the risk was meant to achieve, well, that person won't do it. What happens is we get the impulse to take the risk. We say, gee, that would be, and then there's an unconscious flash in our mind of that terrified look on the parent's face. And our brain says, oh, don't do that. And the brain, what I like to call our best labor-saving device, drops a chemical in our bloodstream that stops us in our tracks. The chemical says, be afraid. The chemical says, be depressed. The chemical says, shy away. And so a person for whom risk-taking was a natural part of who they were, they don't do it. And you can see how this could diminish a person's life, how this could make it less than what it would have been if they had access to everything that they were. But in addition to that, there's always the sense that there's something wrong. We bury this stuff very, very deeply, but we don't lose the sense that there's something about us that's flawed, that's ugly, that's bad, that's dangerous. So in a way, we're at odds with ourselves. We don't like ourselves. We suspect that there's something bad and wrong about us. Now, I don't have to beat this. I don't have to tell you how thinking that there's something wrong with you diminishes your life, makes it less than it would have been. So, the Lynn Show is all about making this point, saying perhaps there was something that you had to deny. And if there is, you may be able to recover it. Recovery is not impossible, although it's not so simple. As we move towards recovery, our brain keeps throwing up for us the reasons that we buried it in the first place. For this reason, most people need some help handling the flashbacks, encouragement and support as we relive the experience of being shut down. And of course, therapy is one of the ways to get that help. So if you're interested in therapy, I encourage you to go out and get it. And if you want to talk to me about it, as I do all of my therapy work on the telephone these days, you can contact me by going to my website, thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, S-H-O-W, thelynshow.com. There's a link that says email me. You can email me and ask me any questions that you like, and I will respond. There's also an article that I wrote called Psychotherapy on the Go, which talks about therapy on the telephone. And there's also the opportunity to get a copy of my book, which talks about cover story, undercover, why it happens, what to do about it. In addition, you can listen to all of the shows that I have done, and this one is show number 290, I think. They're all up there. And in those shows, as in this one, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because when you listen to people who have given a life in one way or another to an art, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. It's there without their trying. And today's interview is not an exception to that rule. This is Jim Weaver, who discovered at 5 or 6 his attachment to theater, even though he didn't really know what it meant. And he held on to it. You can hear him say it never left him from that very moment. And I'm not going to tell you about the moment because it's his story to tell. So, and Jim is here in Sarasota, Florida, as I said in the lead-in, directing and choreographing the WBTT production of Pearly. So I'm also playing several songs from the original cast album of Pearly, in case you didn't get a chance to see it on Broadway and you don't know it. And this will give you, in addition to what Jim says about the show, a real sense of what a delight this is. Okay, so, I'm going to start off with a song from the show called New Fangled Preacher. This kind of sets up the Pearly character. So here is New Fangled Preacher, followed by my interview with Jim Weaver.
Ain't gonna promise no pie in the sky, no life ever after, right after you die. I got a different banner to wave. How about some happiness this side of the grave? Lord lives up in heaven, devil lives in hell, and you and me, we live the best we can. Move over, Billy Sunday, move over, Billy Graham. Make way for a newfangled preacher man. Make way for a newfangled preacher man. Ain't gonna promise no chariot ride, no glorious life on that great other side. I got a different message to spread. How about some glory days before we are dead? The Lord lives up in heaven, devil lives in hell, and you and me, we live the best we can. Move over, Billy Sunday, move over, Billy Graham. Make way for a newfangled preacher man.
tell you the Lord loves you best, and he's gonna prove it when you're laid to rest. I got a different trumpet to play. How about some loving for they take us away? The Lord lives up in heaven, devil lives in hell. You and me, we live the best we can. Move over, Billy Sunday. Move over, Billy Graham. Make way for a new fang of preacher man. We'll see who's gonna dominate this valley. Old Captain or me. Make way for a new fang of preacher man.
Okay, I am here with Jim Weaver in an office at the WBTT offices. And I'm here talking to Jim because he has directed the production, the very first production of the WBTT season, Pearly. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, good. All right. So let me tell you that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
Do you think that describes you at all?
I would have to say yes.
Okay.
I knew at a very young age, I started as an actor.
Okay, wait a second. I have a question to ask you, but the art to which you are currently giving your life, are you saying that it's directing, or are you saying that it's theater altogether, or?
I would have to say that it's theater altogether.
Okay, good.
I've been fortunate enough that that is how I've been able to make my living.
Wow.
All of my adult life.
Oh, my God. All right. Okay. So the question I always ask is the one that you just started to answer.
Oh,
very,
okay.
Very clever. Yes, very, very clever. All right. And that is, do you remember the very first moment in your life when it occurred to you that acting, performing, storytelling, having people look at you was attractive, interesting, compelling?
I don't think it was so much. I know there's this rumor that a lot of performers like people looking at them.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't so much that for me.
Yeah.
My mother's a painter. My sister is a writer. So there's always been this aspect of creativity in our household.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said before, I knew at a young age that I wanted to be a performer. But I think, to answer your question, the very first time that it may have had an incident that had a big influence on me,
mm-hmm.
I remember when I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and my mother and father, my father was the stage manager at the Apollo Theater.
Oh, my goodness.
And got us backstage. And I have two sisters at the time. And we all got to meet James Brown. And for some reason, we went to his dressing room backstage, and for some reason, he singled me out, took me, and put me on his knee.
How old were you?
Like I said, about 6, 7 years old at
wow.
the time. And I was just so mesmerized, and looking at the dressing room, I remember sitting on his lap and him talking to me, and I didn't really comprehend exactly who he was, but I knew there was something about him that was special or important.
Mm-hmm.
And being backstage and seeing the cables and the lights and all that, that's the first thing that comes to mind that could have been a major influence.
Yeah, it's the ambiance. It's the feeling of being in this space.
Yeah.
That feels good, that feels interesting, that feels compelling,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
that's a very, it seems to me, unusual. I mean, a lot of people say, my parents took me to the movies, they took me to film, to theater, and I saw, that, and it was really intriguing to me.
Mm.
I can only think of one other person. Do you know who Kate Alexander is?
Of course.
Yeah.
At Florida Studio.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, Kate tells the story of being 7 and being taken to a performance, and her father was talking to the actor backstage, and she was sitting on the stage thinking to herself, I need to be here.
Yeah, I could see how that would be a similar,
Yeah, but that in itself is not that common, I think, that the ambiance itself captures you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So, do you know where it goes from there?
Oh, well, it took a while before I actually worked up the courage to ask my parents if I could start taking acting classes. And when I finally did, they were like, sure, you can go on the weekends, as long as it, obviously, the usual thing, as long as it doesn't interfere with your schoolwork.
Right. And how old are you here?
I would say I was probably about 10 or 11. So it took a while. I let it stew for a while.
Yeah. But what I'm interested in is, in the stewing thing, you know, in the period between 7 and 10 or 11, it did occur to you. You just didn't act on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, I think I might like to do this. One of these days I'll do this. Ooh, it might be nice to do this like that.
No. It never went away. And I think the reason I hesitated, I wasn't sure how my parents were going to feel about it.
Ah, oh, very interesting. Yeah.
And I knew, you know, you listen and you hear stories and all this kind of stuff, and the feeling never went away. And I also realized, and I don't know why, I was still very young, but that I knew it was challenging, but it felt that it would give me some sort of expression within that I was kind of yearning for. There was something about it.
Yes.
You know, the craft of it and the practice of it. And so when I finally did work up the nerve, they surprised me and said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go from there. I never stopped.
So you started to take acting at 10 or 11?
Mm-hmm.
Were you in plays at school and stuff?
Well, I never did plays at school, but I did plays at some of the various workshops and acting classes that I was involved with. And then actually, while I was in high school, I got my first Broadway show.
You're kidding.
I had chutzpah.
Wait. This is astonishing. We have a boy who's too afraid to ask for acting classes, and now we somehow have a young man, well, I don't know.
16.
Really, an adolescent who has the chutzpah to, what did you do?
Well, the chutzpah comes in where I just decided you hear about things, you learn about things from your peers, and I knew I needed an agent. I went and made a couple of appointments. Now, this is going back several years, but I got an agent. I started getting submitted for voiceover work.
Okay, wait. How are your parents about this? I mean, you know, it's one thing to say, sure, honey, you can have acting classes on the weekend. It's quite another for you to have an agent. I mean,
I think by that point they knew I was serious.
They'd seen you work.
They'd seen me work, and I guess my dedication or the amount of study that I would give to it. And they were like, okay, they obviously had to, I had a contract that I had to sign with the agent, but they had to co-sign, obviously, at that time. So they knew it was legit. There was nothing funny about anything.
Right. No, they were watching your ass.
So yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting to me is that, I mean, God, you know, it's wonderful of them to have been this supportive of you in this clearly, you know, nobody, well, that's actually not true. I'm going to take that back. Few parents are sitting around saying, gee, what we would like is our son to be an actor.
I think what helped me with that is the fact that my mother was a painter.
Yeah, right.
You know, so there was always, like I said, this creative aspect.
Right. They understood the passion to work in an art.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so you're an agented actor at 16. That's amazing. So what happened?
Well, I was getting submitted on voiceover work, radio soap operas, commercials, and landed this Broadway show. I had to get special permission from my teachers and the principal and all that, you know, at high school, that I was able to keep up with my homework, and they would make special, what's the word I'm looking for?
Dispensation.
Mm-hmm. That I would get the assignments and do them outside of the classroom so I could go to rehearsal and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay, now, do you remember the audition process?
Of course.
I mean, had you auditioned for a Broadway show before?
No.
So that must have been a very big deal, no?
I think it was probably a little bit of naivete, youth, that you don't fully comprehend.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And to top it off, they wanted us to come in, those that were auditioning, and do a monologue. Mm-hmm. I wrote my own monologue because I could not find one that fit the situation of the story that I felt was right.
That would show you as someone who could do this role.
Yeah.
This is amazing. I mean, I really think that this is uncommon, that actors write their own monologue so that they can show themselves off at the... I mean, it's... I've never heard anybody do it.
You can search and read, and if something just doesn't hit you right inside, mm-hmm. and I also realized that I was relatively young, so there weren't that many monologues for young people that fit the situation. They were
all older characters.
It was called Don't Call Back, and it was starring Arlene Francis.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Like I said, this is going back a while.
Yeah.
But, so I did that, and actually, they called me back twice. To be, you know, I could see that it came down to a choice between me and, like, one other person. And luckily, they chose me.
Did they say anything to you about the monologue?
They asked me.
Where I got it from. Of course.
And when I said I wrote it, I could see on their faces, they were like,
yes, right.
Really?
Right. You know, it's unusual, I mean, to say the very least.
And for
a boy to do it. I mean, I think it's really unusual. Oh, okay, fine. So you got the role. That's amazing. So when you got the role, were you surprised? Or were we still having innocence here and you're thinking, well, so?
Oh, I was very happy.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wow. You know,
right.
I was very excited.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole situation of having to get special permission to go to rehearsals and do homework assignments, I knew it was unusual.
Shoot.
You know, but it all worked out. It was fine. And luckily, you know, once that job was done, I went on to other jobs and
What other jobs? What kinds of other jobs? I mean, are you saying that you have been working since you were 16?
Pretty much, yeah.
Whew. Wow.
Yeah. Where, just to kind of fill you in, I was also at the same time, like, continuing my acting classes. I was taking dance classes. That was accidental. I was in an acting workshop, and my peers, they were saying that if you take dance classes, it's supposed to help with your sense of freedom on stage as an actor. And then, so I was like, okay, fine, you know, so I went with them begrudgingly. And then you, like, get in class, you achieve a certain ability, you get to another level, then it's like, okay, I can do that now, let me see if I can do this. And then it just kind of gradually snowballed.
Yeah.
But it also helped me to realize as I got older, the more versatile you are, the better your chances are of working in this business.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to deal with dramatic theater, musical theater, and I had this wonderful voice teacher who refused to teach me until I was 18 because the male voice changes. So when she finally took me, I studied with her, and it was just a progression through that. And luckily, it enabled me, if I wasn't working in one aspect of the business, I could work in another. I could do a drama. I could do musical theater.
Right.
As I kept going, it eventually got to me being like dance captain for shows. And then some of the companies I was working for, they wanted me to start helping them mount the shows. So that's how it kind of evolved into...
Explain what that means.
Mounting the shows.
Yeah.
Putting them together. Initially, I would say, like, say if there was a director for the show, and they needed to go and open another production or something, I would be left in charge with the new cast and then put that together. I would remember the choreography, the blocking, whatever the director said, and then assemble that. So that way, when the director could come back, the show would be up on its feet, ready for presentation.
Right.
So,
perfect training for directing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're essentially doing it. You're doing someone else's direction, but never mind, you're really doing it.
You're stretching your mind, and you're taking on the responsibility of it, and you start learning what the parameters are. And
how to work with actors, how to work with dancers, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have you here in a directing capacity.
Yes.
So did you make this shift entirely, or do you still do both, or...?
I would say for a while it was about 50-50.
Well, okay, and tell me how the directing happened for you, how you began to direct.
Well, some of these companies that I became responsible for mounting.
Is there
shows.
A title for that? The Mounter?
I really don't think there is a title for that. Because it's not like, I guess, assistant director.
Yeah, okay, good. Right.
Might be the closest thing.
Right.
Eventually, once these places started realizing that I was executing that responsibility well enough, they said, okay, well, how about choreographing that number? What do you think? You know, they would give me something to do. And then it just kind of grew and grew from there. And then I started doing that with some of the regional theaters as a choreographer.
So you're saying that you never trained as a director and you never particularly looked at, for it. It just grew sort of organically.
I would say, yeah. I mean, you get to an age in the business where you start, I guess, wanting to expand or explore other avenues. I mean, it's the same as many careers. You know, you start wondering, well, what's it like to do that, or what's it like to do the other thing? And I found that I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. It was kind of like putting a puzzle together in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay.
And you had a facility for it.
Yeah, luckily. Luckily. It has its challenges, I would say, because like you said earlier, you have to learn how to deal with different personalities. You have to, my thing is I like to create as positive a working atmosphere as possible. I've worked with directors that can be very hard taskmasters and create this energy in the space that just makes you tighten up. And to me, that's just the opposite of what you want to do when you're trying to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so you
had this experience of what that felt like. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, you could. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
as
a lot
performer,
of, yeah,
yes.
Right. A lot of directors have never been an actor, so they don't have, you know,
that empathy.
Yeah. Well, they don't have. The empathy that grows out of knowing what that's like.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the best directors were actors.
Well, I think they understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming from a place they know what it's like to have to go through the process of creating a character.
Mm-hmm.
And getting your bearings with your other actors and your space and all of that. They know what that feels like. So they, I think, can relate to it more organically and come from that point of view when they're asking someone else to do it.
So so you started to choreograph a little bit, then you started to, and then so somebody said, oh, hell, why don't you direct this, or something like that?
Pretty much. Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you found that you not only could do it, but you really liked it.
Yeah.
And so I think you said that for a while you were doing 50-50, you might be acting, you might be directing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So has it now evolved to being mostly directing, or?
It's heading in that direction, I would say. The last time I performed was probably about 3 years ago now. And with that, obviously still directing and choreographing, but it's heading more in that direction. Which is fine with me.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All right. Do you have a preference to directing either straight plays or musicals? Have you done both?
Yes, I have done both. I would have to say, because of my like of digging into material, probably straight plays.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of work to direct a musical. And when you're directing and choreographing, depending on the size of the musical, like with West Coast, you know, Pearlie is a pretty big show.
Are you directing and choreographing?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, I didn't realize.
So, you know, that...
Oh, my.
It's work.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you enjoy it, it doesn't seem that way.
Have you done this show before?
No, this is the first time that I'm working on the show. I remember seeing it on Broadway back in the Dark Ages.
Yes, right, no kidding.
But this is the first time that I'm directing it. And it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying the process. But I think it's because of the actor in me that I get more fulfillment. And I think we get to dig deeper when it's a dramatic piece or a straight play.
Yeah.
Or comedic, you know.
Well, they're more about character, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, which is basically hearkening back to my first love.
That's right.
And this is one thing that I say to all of my performers, whether it's musical theater or drama. You know, if you're singing, if you're dancing, it all comes from that same foundation, which is acting. You're telling a story. And it's got to be expressed through your body and your face if you're singing, through your voice. I mean, body and face if you're dancing.
Right.
And then, you know, through your voice and all of that if you're singing. It all has to come from that truth of whatever that character is trying to say, which is acting.
As opposed to, here I am singing and dancing.
Then it becomes like, okay, I just want you to look at me. And the audience is not moved at all.
No,
and if the audience doesn't feel something, what's the point?
Yeah. So do you find that that there are a lot of actors who understand that, or do you think that...
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I'm finding unfortunately, some of the younger actors these days are doing it because they see so much on TV. They think, you know, all the glamour and glitz of it versus the hard work that's involved, but the truth of where you have to go, what you have to be able to express and know how to express. And that's something, I don't know if it's training or what, but it seems to be kind of disappearing a little bit. Scary.
Well, I think it is, and I think that something that you said earlier, which I have heard before from, not young actors, right, is this recognizing early on that the desire for expression, you know, to express something about themselves, to bring something about themselves out, to you know, that's not the same as I want to be a star.
Right. Two different things.
Right. And I think that what you're saying is a lot of the young people who get into it because they see, you know, stars, and they want to be known, they want to be special, they want whatever
TV,
that is, right.
All of that
right.
stuff.
But
yeah.
That's got nothing to do, really, with what the work is.
Exactly.
Yeah. So then the challenge for a director is even greater, because you have to go... You have to. I mean, if you have actors who understand this to begin with, you don't have to teach them that.
Right.
Do you know?
You know, it's very interesting because you're making me think about a situation. I directed this show, production of Working, just mm-hmm. this past summer, and I faced that challenge because there are some people, for whatever reason, it's almost instinctual. You can tell them one thing, and they will run with it.
Yes.
And then others you have to coach through. You do basically have to teach them how to express this or how to express that.
Right.
So it becomes challenging. And that's something that as you go through the audition process.
You hope that you have.
Yeah. But it also, as I was getting more and more involved with this aspect of the business, it made me understand why so many directors wind up working with the same people.
Yes, of course.
They know what they're going to get. And what the facility of the actor is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It makes it easier, right?
Mm.
But it also guarantees a certain level of I want to say. Well, what I want to say, I don't want to say. It guarantees a certain level of quality.
Yes.
You know that you can get that from them, so you don't have to. You know.
It takes some of the worry off of you.
Right.
You can say, this is what we need to get to.
Right.
And they understand it, right. And they're able to give it to you.
To give it to you, right.
Yeah.
So, but you're not always in a position, I'm guessing. A director is not always in a position to choose their actors, are they, or they always are?
Not always. It varies. It depends on the company you're working for, what the situation is. You have to just kind of be flexible and go with the flow.
Right. Well, for example, here, have you directed here before?
Yes, I have.
Oh, so you know the players, so to speak.
Yeah, it's an ever-evolving group of mm-hmm. people, because the first time that I worked with them was about 5 years ago, 6 years ago maybe, and it was a different crop of people, different group of people then mm-hmm. compared to now. So it's, sometimes it's nice when you see a familiar face.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I've worked with you before. I know what we're able to do.
Right.
And in this particular situation with Pearlie, coming in as a the choreographer as well as the director, their level of ability of movement I wasn't sure of, because we didn't get to do that through an audition process.
You didn't get to see them dance?
Nope. But that, to me, and I don't know if that's unusual too, but to me that's part of my challenge and my job, to take what the abilities are, what the performers can give, and work within that. And there are times when I will give a group of people a movement, and if it doesn't look right, or if I'm getting, you know, five different versions of the same thing, after you try to solidify it, if it still doesn't look right, I'll change it.
Yeah.
Because I am of the mindset, I want them to go out there looking their best.
Yeah, and you want them to be their most comfortable, too. You don't
exactly.
want them out there worrying whether this step is the one I can't get.
Because
you know?
You're not thinking about the show. You're not thinking about what it is, the story you're trying to tell.
You're thinking about your feet.
Exactly.
Right.
And the audience can pick that up in a second.
Yeah. Okay, so do you want to say something about the show itself? Talk about Pearlie so that people know?
Well, like I said, I remember seeing it on Broadway with Melba Moore and Cleavon Little. And I remember that it was such a fun show. It, you know, there are just certain shows that for whatever reason they stay with you, they stay in your memory. And that's one of them. And I actually found out an interesting anecdote just the other day that the song I Got Love, Melba Moore's big star maker song, only went into the show about 4 days before it opened.
Oh, my God.
That one of the cast members told this to their roommate, so it, you know, that's how they found out. It used to be a dance number, and they hated it, and they decided to take the melody, add lyrics to it, and then gave it to her, like I said, about 4 days before the show opened.
Wow.
And to me, that's like kismet. It's like amazing. It was meant to be.
Meant to be is exactly right.
You know, so it's good memories of the show, and when Mr. Jacobs approached me to put it up for them, I was like, are you kidding? Of course. You know, my concern with it is because it's based, obviously, on the play Ossie Davis wrote, which is dealing with some personalities and characters that go back to, like, the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Mm. Some of the things that they say, you just don't hear nowadays.
Are you talking about the language, or are you talking about the content?
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
Wow.
Just some of the terms that, there's like a Captain Kachapi is one of the characters. And for all intents and purposes, he walks around looking like Colonel Sanders. You know, very stereotypical type of things. And the other characters are sharecroppers, and they talk about his cotton and his land like that. And you just don't see that nowadays.
Right.
So my concern was to take this story, would it lend itself to being updated in any way or contemporized? And thinking back to how I felt about it when I first saw it, the context of what they say, I basically came of the mind, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, because the way people today would react to some of the things that are said would be so completely different. And the show says a lot, and it harkens back to the civil rights movement at points, you know, because that was when it was kind of in its heyday on Broadway. But it still has, I think, a pertinent message, just in terms of race relations have evolved and changed to a great extent, but the conflicts have not totally disappeared.
No.
You know, it's changed, maybe gone underground a little bit, or just the way things are expressed have changed. Maybe not as overt. I mean, it's hard, you know, it's a gradual thing. Luckily, a lot has changed. But you learn these things from your parents, from earlier generations.
That's right.
And it takes time for the mindset of those things to change.
I think that's exactly right.
You know, and, what was it? You got me thinking about, I think, Julianne Hough from Dancing with the Stars has been raked over the coals recently because for Halloween, she went out dressed as in blackface as one a character from some TV show that she really admired. And
who didn't like it?
The press, people around her, somehow pictures were taken and then it got on the internet And this was like just this past Halloween. And she had to apologize.
What was it that... I'm sorry.
Because she went out and darkened her face.
Well, I understand, but what did people think? That she was making fun or that she was somehow demeaning?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this whole thing about blackface and minstrel shows,
all that
kind of stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right.
But the reason I brought it up is because she is of a newer generation, and she genuinely did not look at it that way.
Yeah, she didn't get it.
She didn't think of it in that way. She was just being a character that she thought was funny or that she admired.
Right.
Based on what the actor does.
Right. She probably never saw a minstrel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. So that, to me, is a positive thing.
Right.
Because that means the mindset...
Hers changed.
Hers is changing.
Right.
You know, as the generations go through, they're all evolving into just be yourself, just be people, you know.
Unfortunately, we can't live long enough to see all these things die. But
but I mean, I think something like that, an unfortunate incident that kind of took on a negative connotation that she was made aware of because of other people's mindsets, shows, though, that kind of thinking is fading away.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I say I thought it was a positive thing. And also, just to get back to Pearlie, that's why I felt, because we're dealing with such iconic type of people from another generation, to just let it be what it is.
Yeah.
And I think the audience, the point of it is to be able to tell a story and have a point, but do it in a way that the audience enjoys.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes things are so much more palatable when they're done with humor.
With humor. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I think that's right. Okay. The other question that I ask is, having given a life, and you have given a life to the theater, is there anything you would say about what that's like?
It's a joy. I feel very fortunate. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your ups and downs and stuff like that. Sometimes the working experiences are great and they're like lifetime memories. Others you'd rather forget. But still, I have to say, to use your word, it's rare that someone can say that. And I understand that and accept that and feel very privileged and lucky that I've been able to do that. Mm-hmm. And what it also says to me is that from that time that I was 7, 8 years old, it was the right choice.
Oh, I love that, and that's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Jim, and come out and see Pearlie. Oh, just tell us when it's running.
It opens on November 15th and runs for 4 weeks at the West Coast Black Theater Troupe.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
What that also says to me is that the choice I made when I was 7 or 8 years old was the right choice. And what it says to me is that it was possible for him to know at 7 or 8, simply because he was backstage in a theater, that was where he needed to be. This is where he felt right. This was what he wanted to be a part of. And because he was lucky enough to have parents who would support that, he was able to hold on to that and be who he is for his entire life. And that, of course, is my hope for all of you. And so it is my hope that you are inspired by this. Do you remember something that you felt at 3 or 5 or 7 or 10? Some impulse, some compulsion, some attraction? Did you forget it? Did you put it aside? Can you remember it now? Or perhaps there are stories about you that are still being told in the family about how you would gravitate to the crayons and draw these silly things for hours on hours. Or maybe you're like me and you like to read so much that they couldn't get your attention once your nose was in a book. Or maybe many things, right? So if you've been listening to Jim, listening to me, and had a memory of something that interested you, turned you on, compelled you. Maybe this is the time in your life when you can re-explore that, rediscover it, uncover it. And if you want some help with that, you know, you can go to my website, thelinshow.com, where you can email me if you've got questions about that. There's the tab that says email me. Or you can read my book. Or you can listen to many, many other people who have had this experience, because all of the shows, as I've said, are up on the website. Okay, as always, I hope that you got something from this show that you can use. Something that interested you, obviously something that inspired you, something that made you laugh, as Jim and I were laughing, something that absorbed you, that you perhaps learned something you didn't know or remembered something that you knew but forgot, something that will bring you back, because as always, I will be here next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too. Now, we're going to go out on another cut from the cast album of Pearly. The first cut that you heard, Newfangled Preacher Man, that was Cleavon Little. And this cut is the one that Jim was referring to, Melba Moore's Star Turn, the accident that propelled her. This is I've Got Love.
I got mine. I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. From the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten